Hi, I'm Helen Nugent. I'm the editor of Northern Soul. I'm here today with Al and Al to talk about their amazing exhibition, Instance of Travel in the Multiverse. So tell me a little bit about it. I know that's a bit of a wide question, so let me make it slightly more specific. Essentially, it's three journeys that you're taking with three scientists. Is that right?
Yes. It's a body of work that we've made over the last 6 years. The first journey is called Icarus at the Edge of Time, which was a collaboration with the physicist Brian Greene. And it's a space opera that is in two different manifestations in the exhibition. It exists as a beautiful new triptych that we've developed from the original work, which is a live concert hall performance with an 80-piece orchestra. We collaborated with Philip Glass on that piece as well. The second journey, The Creator, is a film about the last day of Alan Turing's life and a contemplation on his work, particularly over the final years of his life. And there's also a lot of work around that piece, Superstitious Robots, which is a piece that we made just before The Creator, which focuses on an event that happened just before Alan Turing passed away. He went to a tarot card reading in Blackpool. This had a very significant effect on him. He was with his Jungian psychiatrist at the time. And when he came out of the tarot reading, his Jungian psychiatrist said he was completely white as a sheet and he never spoke to him again. He never spoke all the way home to Manchester, and literally 10 days later he was dead. So we were very fascinated by this moment, how a man of such logic could have been possibly so affected by something so irrational and illogical. So there's a huge installation around The Creator with tarot cards that have been remade with thinking machines in them. And then the third journey
is The Demiurge. And The Demiurge started life with Dr. Bart Hoogenboom, who is the director at the London Centre for Nanotechnology in London. And Bart is a nanobiophysicist who has developed a cantilever needle for an atomic force microscope. And what he's been doing with this is stroking atoms at the deepest scale that we've ever been able to do. And as he strokes the atoms, images are created of the shapes that he finds down there. And obviously, one of the samples that he has made an image of is DNA. And it's the first real image that we've ever had of DNA, even though there is the famous Rosalind Franklin x-rays from the 50s. They are actually only an image of the shadow of DNA. And so we were absolutely fascinated by the idea of making images at that scale. Being artists, you're always fascinated by a new image and how an image is created. So we went to see him and had a chat, and he showed us around the extraordinary nano world that he's exploring. And it got us thinking about making a work about DNA, because obviously all life comes from DNA, and it's an extraordinary discovery that we've made in the last 50 years. And the person who did discover it, Francis Crick with Watson, once he discovered DNA, scientists started to look at all life and tried to search for how many different types of code were there at the beginning of life and how many different forms of code exist in the world. And they were completely shocked. Francis Crick was completely shocked to discover that there was only one code. And this made him start to think, well, that means there must have been some extraordinary bottleneck at the beginning of life on Earth. And so this got him to the theory of what he called directed panspermia, which is the idea that life was planted on Earth at a certain moment by one thing. This theory has really inspired us to make a new film about DNA and about the origins of life. In a sense, the concept of the film goes in two directions. It goes to the future of DNA manipulation, because we're right on the cusp now of being able to engineer our own bodies, to make ourselves faster, to make ourselves more intelligent, to make ourselves live longer. So we're really on this extraordinary moment. So we started to imagine a science fiction film where there was a spaceship that was populated by 1,000 genetically modified clones who were traveling 500-year journey across the galaxy to go and discover the origins of life and who planted life on Earth. And we've got this extraordinary performance from this actress, Sophie Linfield, who has had to perform all these different parts and sit at the table in every single position and be the commander and be the judge and be all sorts of different things. And it's been really a wonderful journey that has connected us across the different works that we've made in the exhibition.
Just to go back to Turing, who obviously is one of the region's most famous sons, and you're both from Manchester as well, is that right?
That's right, that is right.
One of his favourite films was Snow White.
Yeah.
You make reference to that in the exhibition. So how do you go about talking about that within the exhibition we can see here at home?
It is one of Turing's favourite films. He had an eclectic taste. So the Snow White for us, he was very famous that he used to repeat the lines. There were some very famous things that he was renowned for saying and thought it was very funny and obviously had an odd sense of humour. So we've just sort of, we've brought that on. Obviously, he symbolically either did commit suicide with an apple or it was placed there by whoever murdered him to make it look as if it was some kind of accident or suicide. And so the apple has always fascinated us with Turing. For example, we're developing it as a feature film at the moment with the BFI, the creator's short, and we spoke to Philip Glass, who wants to work on it with us, who wants to compose the music for it, and he didn't actually know who Alan Turing was, which is fascinating to think that, like, the modern world, everybody knows who Steve Jobs is because he designed an iPhone, but nobody nobody actually knows who Alan Turing is. And funnily enough, when we spoke to Philip Glass about working on a Turing film, a feature film, and he said, who is this man? We just said, just have you got your iPhone on you? He took his iPhone out and we showed him the back of it and said, that symbol with the byte taken out of it is Alan Turing. All the computers come from that. Obviously, Steve Jobs used to deny that the Apple logo was that, but Steve Wozniak, who's the co-founder of Apple, said that Alan Turing is the seed of every computer. And so it just features all the way through the film, and the Snow White element does feature all the way through.
I think in a sense, the apple as a symbol of knowledge, you know, obviously goes back to the last creation myth our culture had before we substituted it with evolution. But Turing essentially was having Jungian therapy in the last years of his life after his arrest and conviction. And he was keeping dream diaries. And our film is all about these sessions and these dreams that Turing had. And he had extraordinary dreams. And because he was having Jungian therapy, he was being asked to analyse the symbols and the archetypes that appeared in his unconscious mind. And of course, the apple must have appeared there, and the symbolic suicide, if it was that, would have been related to that study of signs and symbols.
I was talking to the curator of your exhibition, Bren, and he had a really interesting way of describing your work. He said that it's like unpicking a jumper and knitting a new item of clothing. Do you think that's accurate?
He does have some wonderful ways of describing things.
Bren is picking up on an idea in the work, which is that things transform, but things remain within that transformation. And as gay men as well, for example, we've always grown up being called unnatural, but we've always felt natural. And the interesting thing about technology in this work is that it's seen as a natural transformation of nature, that the nature of technology interests us because we see it as natural. And that, for example, recently, intelligent machines are called artificial. Artificial intelligence, people say. But we recognise that just that word in itself, if someone said to me, you're artificially intelligent, I'd think that they were putting me down. And so when we started to identify with this new intelligent species that Turing has created, that will soon be with us, we realised that they were being given the same kind of labels that Turing was when he was creating this new species. And so there is this sense in which when you unknit the building blocks of nature, you know, that all life shares this code, this DNA. And so these lines, these threads that come from our jumpers and create new jumpers, as Bren would have it, are all part of this journey of the transformation of nature and the realization of intelligence through matter. And so the exhibition, in some ways, is about that journey.
Obviously, this is very much about science and art. What do you say to people who say, well, they're not natural bedfellows?
For us, art is a way of exploring, thinking about and sharing your experiences of reality. And we live in an age that is defined by scientists. So for us, they are completely natural bedfellows.
I think also what we've learned as we've studied scientists more and more is that the things that happen in their lives inspire the science. Everyone expects an artist to be somehow motivated and connected to, you know, what they're making. You know, when you think about the great art, there's all these great stories about who an artist painted. This happens in science too, because as we've got closer and we've allowed these voices in and we've collaborated with these people who are shaping our reality, we've realised there's such a connection. When you create science or you create art, you create the world through things that are happening to you.
Well, thank you very much both to Al and to Al. And if you're listening to this, please go and see the exhibition. You won't see anything else like it this year. I've been Helen Nugent from Northern Soul. Thanks.